All right, let's go ahead and take our seats. Well, I should have had Pastor Otto do the mimicking of Paul Barker, but I went ahead and did it anyway. Well, trust you had a good lunch. I hope this has been rich for all of you. It has been certainly for me. And Pastor Paul, by the way, he's in another meeting, so that's why he's not here. But okay. So when the cat is away, all right. Well, that's an application of what Dr. Greg just mentioned, so I think I'm all for it. Anyway, I know this has been so enriching, as I said, and, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, when Dr. Greg was just speaking, he's kind of like a surgeon, you know, skillfully, you know, opening up some wounds and suturing that, not the wound, it's more the precision by which he uses God's word and to describe, you know, how that applies in our situations. I think it's just amazing. And so without further ado, we're going to be turning it over back to him, and we'll just go. All right, let's give Dr. Greg another big hand.
Thank you very much. All right, what we are going to do this afternoon is we're going to break our time up into three sections. The first section, I would like us to do a bit of small group in your tables, a little bit of discussion. You can work off your lunch, and you don't have to listen to me for the first little bit, which is always good news. And then we're going to complete the notes. And then I would like to have the last part of our time together, the last hour at least, to be able to do scenarios. And I would like you to come up with those scenarios. So could you please, between now and that time, could you be thinking of some scenarios, some places of tension in your family or ministry that you would like to be able to bring out, and then we're going to work that through together in terms of the framework that we've been talking about, all right? One thing that might be helpful for you to understand, so we talked about, I talked about these three conversions of being converted to the gospel, to a gospel of love. And then now, looking at anxiety, it's really trying to understand the problem. And the better that we can understand the problem, the better we can see how the gospel really works. So here's the two questions that I would like you to discuss in your small groups. They're not written down, so if you'd please write them down. And this is, where do you experience anxiety? What does that anxiety look like? Number one, where do you experience anxiety? Everywhere is not an appropriate answer. Where do you experience anxiety? Be specific. And then what does that anxiety look like for you? Okay? Is that clear? All right, go into your tables, and if each of you could please answer those questions and talk it through. We'll give you about 20 minutes. All right. If I can call your attention to the front. What kind of answers did you have? Where do some of you experience tension or anxiety? What are some places where you experience that? Be big and brave. I'm not going to do what Paul says. I'm not going to pick on anybody. Where do you experience anxiety? You may not know this, but Gilbert is actually a source of anxiety for people. Where do you experience anxiety? Just don't grab a mic. Just say where you are. Where do you experience it?
Finances.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. Where else? Yeah. It's a big one. Busy schedule. Boy, that's true. Yeah. Where else? In-laws. I think in-laws are the definition of anxiety. That's what I think so. Yeah. Where else?
Not my brother-in-law.
No. No. Yeah. What does anxiety typically look like in you? Are you more of a rescuer, a persecutor, a victim? Or you look like something else? What does it look like in you? Okay, if you all talk at once, we can't hear any of you. I'm saying this to you not so that you, it's not to embarrass you, but other people need to hear how other people struggle. It's really helpful. So please, be vulnerable. Lead, yes.
I guess when you're anxious, you have sleepless nights.
Yeah, yeah. Sleepless.
Plus ulcers.
Yeah, ulcers.
Smoking.
Smoking? Sure, sure. Did you know this about him? Did you know this? Snoring. Oh, snoring. I think we should have a little talk afterwards and find out what's going on here. Yeah. Yeah. What does it look like for you?
Hair loss.
What does it look like? Yes, Robert.
You work hard.
Yeah. Just longer hours. Yes. That's right. Yes. That's really good. Let's put it in the language. That's is that a rescuer, a persecutor, or a victim?
Rescuer.
That's a rescuer. Why is that a rescuer? Sorry? You're compensating. You're overfunctioning. It's not solving anything, but you're busy. It actually isn't going to produce change. So Debbie will tell you, I'm a workaholic. That is my solution to most problems in life. You just buckle down and work harder. And Debbie will tell me, she's very, very generous in how she lets me work. And then she'll say, you know what? You're done now. I go, no, but I just got to get this one other thought. I just got to finish this. I think you're done now. And then I have to walk away. And then it's shocking. I come back and I hear the word of the Lord because I'm in a place of peace. And now I'm not doing busy work. I'm doing what God has given me to do. And it dramatically changes. The right thing to do was to stop working so that I could create space for peace in my heart, for God to speak to me, and then I would know what needs to be done. But anxious work actually stopped me from doing what I really needed to do. That's a huge issue. Yes?
And I think the lie sometimes is that because you're working and your work is for God, and you could note that too, okay, now I'm being busy for God because there's some work of God, but you miss the point of the whole thing.
How can you tell the difference between, and don't be funny, how can you know the difference between when you're working for God and when you're working out of anxiety? How can you tell the difference? Okay, who gets the glory? But how do, in that moment, maybe rephrase that, but how do you know in the moment, is this anxious work or is this faith-filled work? How can you tell? Yes?
When you can entrust the results to him rather than your own.
That's fascinating. When you can entrust the results to him. That's really interesting. Very good. Yeah, somebody else put their hand up over here. Who is that? No? thought I saw that. How can you tell the difference? Ah, yeah. Okay. How can you tell the difference? Yes, sir.
Yes, motivation.
Okay, good.
If you're motivated to just solve a problem. And
good.
Make that thing can really make you look good at work.
Sure.
But as compared to you're motivated to live in a positive world.
Good, good. So what you're motivated by, is this helping somebody else or not? That's really good. One of the things that I do to try to understand this, these comments are great, is I'm asking myself, who am I reacting off of right now? Who am I responding to? Am I responding to God right now? Or am I responding to the pressures or the expectations of what I feel around me? And so, what are the faces that are in my mind? Is it the image of God? Or is it the image of this person and this person who's going to be disappointed with me? Or is it my own image of myself that I'll be disappointed in myself? Who am I responding to right now? Because remember, we're always responding. We're always part of a system. All we get to choose is who we're responding off of. And so if I can tell, oh, I'm going to disappoint this person. Oh, I'm not going to look good. I'm not going to save face if I don't work. Now I know that this is anxious work. And I need to live in response to God. Any other comments about that? Would you like to say something?
I just wanted to say, you know, during crisis, kids from a valley experience.
Yes. Maybe can somebody give him a microphone if that's, is there, there we go, there's one right there. Robert, right Robert. Behind you.
I just love your description of the Kidron Valley this morning, because that's what we experience in Christchurch, where people turned against us and we lost 200 people at a time we bought a church building. And my coping mechanism at that time was not to become a workaholic. It was to withdraw into Adullam's cave. It was a way of protecting myself and not being exposed to the demonic forces that had faces, and there were faces that were people against us. And so for us and for my wife, we withdrew.
Yes.
And it was kind of just protecting who we are. And so that's how we coped with our anxiety.
Yes. Yes.
During that season.
Boy, am I ever familiar with that. Absolutely. Yeah. How do persecutors respond to anxiety? Is anybody here a persecutor? Come on now. This is a safe place. Anybody here? I'm a persecutor. They're blame. So what they're going to do is they're going to tell everyone else what needs to be done. They won't own any personal responsibility. And you'll watch a persecutor will just ramp up the intensity of the moment and start telling people, this needs to be done now. Now we're going to be doing this. Don't be lazy. This is the time to step up. And this is what you need to be doing right now. And they'll start getting very, very directive. And so persecutors are typically quite strong and forceful in telling everybody else exactly what they need to do. Now, there are times when decisions do need to be made. But you can tell a persecutor will never have any to-do list for themselves. It'll be about what everybody else needs to do. It'll never be about what they need to do. They won't go first in changing. You all need to do this. Because the belief is the problem is out there. The problem is not here. So that's how you can tell if you're persecuting, is you're off the to-do list. Very action-oriented. People will often couch their persecutor in using faith language, but it's just a disguise for blame. There's no you won't hear compassion in their voice. You hear accusation. So I mean I don't want to pick on any gender, but sometimes you've probably heard that from your wives, right? Is that this is all that you're doing wrong. And so when they're doing that, that's persecuting you. And so you have two choices, and you have two unhealthy responses in that moment. You can withdraw, yes, dear, or I think I have another meeting to go to now. Right? That's all withdrawal. Or you can fight back. I tried this with my wife, Debbie. She comes from a German background, really, really loud and clear. And I come from a very, it's all subtle and a little quiet, you know? So when we were first married, I thought she would raise her voice at me. And I thought, oh, okay, I can do that. And then I'd raise my voice. And then she'd raise her voice. And then I'd raise my. I thought, okay, well, that's not the best solution. Here's the best solution. So you don't control or try to lord it over or dominate, nor do you disengage. You stay present in the moment, and you do, if you were there last night, you say, tell me more. And as soon as you say, tell me more, it reduces their anxiety because they don't have to fight for their side anymore. I've joined your side. Instead of this, I'm not pressing anymore. I'm saying, I'm on your side now. Tell me more. I'm trying to understand from your perspective what's going on. As soon as you join their side, all the wind of anxiety comes out of their sails. It's such a helpful thing to do. Okay, do you believe this? That when somebody is complaining, it's a way of telling you something that really matters to them. They're just not doing it in a great way. So I think this would be especially true in your culture, where confrontation isn't your first response to things. So if somebody actually says something negative, it probably means they really, really care about it. Your job is to find out what you can side with. So using the business example, we should be doing more. You listen, say, tell me more, help me understand. And if you listen long enough, I guarantee you'll find something to agree with. I can't think of a time when somebody has come up to me, because it's intimidating coming up to a pastor and complaining. I think it is. And I think it's good that we know that. So if somebody comes up to me, they must really care about what they're thinking about if they have that much courage to say something. And so my first is to react. I want to be defensive and say the other side and how they're misunderstanding my motives, or we've already thought of that, or whatever. And I instead, tell me more. And they keep talking, and you begin to hear the word of the Lord through your enemies. And I'm not exaggerating. I listen to the people who have complained, who are Christians. And they really do know something. And if I go, oh, man, you don't, I mean, yes, it's more complicated than that. I mean, that's what, you know, we're above anyways. What's your little idea and thing? No, tell me more. And you begin to hear God speak through people in the most remarkable ways. But you humble yourself. And you listen, and you don't react. It's very, very helpful. I lost track of the question. How do you respond? Do you know whether you're a rescuer, persecutor, or victim? Just nod, because you seem too nervous to admit one of those. Can you tell if you're one of those? Do you have a default? No, yes, no? Okay. So I usually go between rescuer and persecutor. I'm a top dog. In that language, I'm super, super helpful until I get tired. And I'll say, here's all that you need to do. I also am happy to be a victim as well. I'm a well-rounded, anxious person. Okay, so you need to know this about you. You know how Paul does strength finders? How helpful was it for you to know what your strengths are? And other people's strengths, incredibly helpful. You do need to know your dark side. I hate to break it to you. But you watch and you go, I'm over-functioning. You watch, I'm withdrawing. Here it is. I can see what I'm doing, and I know where this is going to go. And you take your pulse, and you are going to be so helped by knowing what anxiety looks like in your life. And then you know I need to come and be present, but no longer react off of them, but be responsive to God. And now you're a leader in that moment. You're the non-anxious presence.